From Johnstown to Jersey Shore, Latrobe to Elizabethtown, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania lags other states in the competition to keep and attract businesses and the jobs they create. David Taylor and Kevin Shivers are here with a Capital Watch look at what steps can be taken to improve the situation. And California voters are revolting against a gas tax hike. Pennsylvania voters are angry as well. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The Pennsylvania State Senate this past week passed and sent over to the House a bill that would change the way appellate court justices and judges are elected. Currently, Supreme Court justices, along with Commonwealth and Superior Court judges, are elected statewide. The Senate bill would change that and have those jurists elected by district, similar to how members of Congress and the state legislature are elected. The provision was attached to a bill that would change the process for drawing congressional and legislative districts, supposedly to allow for more citizen input and less gerrymandering. Currently, members of the state's three appellate courts live in just 15 of 67 counties, and most regions of the state have no representation on those courts. The Senate proposal would have the judicial district lines drawn by the same commission that would redraw congressional district lines. Independence Day is rapidly approaching, and a new law has taken effect that will allow Pennsylvania residents to purchase and set off aerial and explosive fireworks without having to get a permit. While advising users to take safety precautions, the new law allows the sale and use of such fireworks subject to certain restrictions relative to distance from structures. Such fireworks will come at a cost, however. In addition to paying the normal 6% sales tax, the state added a 12% tax on top of that for such purchases. The pending release of a grand jury report detailing child sexual abuse in the Catholic Church has resulted in a renewed legislative push for abolishing the statute of limitations for child sex crimes. State Representative Mark Rossi, himself a victim of child sex abuse, is pushing for a House vote on the issue. The House did overwhelmingly pass its legislation 2 years ago, but Senate changes doomed the bill. Rossi is hoping attention generated by release of the grand jury's findings will create public pressure to finally get the bill passed into law. Read about all things Pennsylvania at the all-new patownhall.com. Yet another report has found what we already know. Pennsylvania's tax and regulatory climate hurts efforts to keep and attract businesses. But legislation is now before the General Assembly that would allow businesses in Penns Woods to take full advantage of recent federal tax cuts and allow them to grow and create more jobs. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Kevin Shivers from the National Federation of Independent Business for this week's Capital Watch discussion. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Kevin Shivers, Executive State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. Kevin, thanks for being on the show.
Great to be with you, David. Thank you.
Our front in the war is competitiveness and economic growth. And so the times that we live in now, we want to believe that we are on the cusp of some kind of a national recovery after a long period of very sluggish growth, the most sluggish recovery from a national recession in American history. And the exciting news is that your organization has some survey results that point that things may be looking up.
Sure, that's right. So for the last 45 years, my organization, NFIB, has tracked, we call it the Small Business Optimism Index, and we've talked about it on the show from time to time, where we talk to small business owners across the country, and we ask them, last month, how many of you hired people, had job openings, how many of you had saw an increase or decrease in sales, how many of you decided to expand capacity, or what have you done in terms of making purchases for equipment? But then we also ask the questions, going forward. Now, next month, what do you think you see happening, you know, next month or next quarter in those same categories? Plans to hire, plans to buy new equipment, plans to increase your capacity, plans to expand your plant. What do you see? And what's really cool about this is the data set that the NFIB Research Center has compiled, because it's 45 years old, you have a really great three-dimensional view of the economy, and you can make decisions. You always have a lot of politicians, David, who they always point to just the unemployment numbers as the, you know, that's the indicator of the economy. Well, if you think about it, that's kind of like driving down a road with nothing but the rearview mirror as your guide, that you're only looking at what happened last month with jobs numbers to determine what the economy on a forward-looking basis is going to do. With the data that NFIB collects, there actually is an opportunity to take a look at what does the economy look like through the eyes of the Main Street business people who are actually making those decisions. And the NFIB research, according to our NFIB's president and CEO, Juanita Dugan, the optimism level for small businesses, David, nationally has reached the stratosphere, that we are looking at historic levels of optimism for Main Street. And quite honestly, the numbers here prove the point that if you lower taxes and if you reduce regulations, employers are going to hire people, they're going to raise wages, and they're going to make more stuff to sell.
That's exciting stuff. So again, we're talking about a very large data set because NFIB has so many members all across the country in all kinds of sectors, because most businesses in America are small businesses. So your organization has businesses of all types in all 50 states. And what do the numbers show?
Compensation, wages, you know, salaries that we're paying workers. Small business owners are reporting that we are now at a 45-year high in terms of the level of compensation increases.
Wow.
So for the last 8 years, David, you and I have talked about all of these programs and subsidies to help people. We've been talking about rising unemployment and joblessness and public assistance to deal with these people. There has been continual, you know, we need to raise the minimum wage. We need to do other things. You know, government has to do other things to help boost salaries. And what have we always talked about? We've had, you know, not only you and I, but we've had other employers on the, if you, an economist, if you just get government out of the way, you let the economy take hold, that employers are going to have to find good workers. Yeah. They're going to have to raise wages.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we're seeing.
If you establish good pro-growth fundamentals to allow those employers and investors to innovate and to work to satisfy customers, that yes, these sort of positive trends will move up strongly.
That's exactly right. Go diving down into those numbers. There's a net 18% of these employers are reporting their plans to create more jobs. You're looking at 29% of these owners have job openings for skilled workers, and that's the highest number that NFIB has recorded since 2000. 12% of these small businesses report job openings for unskilled workers. So, you know, not only is there demands for people that have skills, but now we're seeing increases in the number of positions that are available for new entrants the marketplace.
And that's so critically important, because you were talking about those, about the number of the unemployment percentage number. And part of the problem with that particular statistic is that it stops counting people who are no longer looking for work.
That's right.
So to have information like this, where new entry level jobs are being created and wages are rising, that hopefully this will be what brings people off the sidelines, gets them pursuing work again, finding work, being employed, being productive.
And we talked a minute ago about just how comprehensive the data set that the NFIB has been collecting. The areas where we've seen the strongest demand for workers is in transportation. It's in travel, communications, the utility sector. We certainly see that here in, you know, Pennsylvania, with the explosion of the pipeline infrastructure development to harvest our natural gas resources in our state. And what's just incredibly powerful is the the note is that over a third of small business owners nationally have reported increasing compensation to attract job applicants. So, you know, the idea that we've got to raise our pay in order to bring good people in, it's happening. It didn't need to come from a government program. There didn't need to be a mandate that if you unbridle the American economy, get people working again, that the marketplace is going to bear out for that cost of labor.
This gets us, Kevin, to the point where we want to talk about competitiveness, because this broad national survey shows us that a broad-based national recovery is underway. And then for the work that we do based in Harrisburg, how well Pennsylvania stacks up with our competitor states, that will determine how much of this national recovery, this economic growth that we're seeing across America, how much of that we will get here. And so this is – it's not only that when the times get bad that things here wind up being worse. It's also that when the times broadly are going well, that in Pennsylvania they're good, but they're still not as good as they ought to be.
That's exactly right. And you've often talked about how this whole idea that growth, it's just not – you know, it's a dynamic thing, that it's a moving target, that you know, these performance numbers, what we're doing here in Pennsylvania, well, you know, if they're going up, well, that's great. But we're not looking at what our neighboring states are doing, or our competitor states, or even what's happening around the world. And a perfect example of that, you have politicians here in Harrisburg who are beating their chest, patting themselves on the back because we have higher sales tax revenues coming into the state. There are higher income tax revenues coming into the state. And it's like, look at that. Things are getting better. And obviously, the NFIB research points out that, yeah, they are getting better. We're seeing higher sales nationally. We're seeing higher incomes nationally. But now we got to peel away that layer, because even though things are looking good in Pennsylvania compared to those competitor states, that's what we need politicians and the policymakers in Harrisburg to take a look at.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me in the studio, Pennsylvania NFIB's Kevin Shivers. And talking about that competitiveness differential, our friends Dr. Jake Houck and Dr. Frank Gamrat at the Allegheny Institute out in Pittsburgh did a report just the other day talking about the Pittsburgh region being out of sync with U.S. labor market performance. And just to give you the top line of some of their stats, that in the seven county Pittsburgh metro region, that the Pittsburgh labor force shrunk actually by 1.5%, and that household employment slipped by 0.7%. But over the same period, this was April of 17 to April of 18, over that same 12-month period, that the U.S. labor force climbed by 0.8%, and the number of people counted as being employed rose 1.3%. So again, opposite trends. And you look at private payroll employment in the Pittsburgh region, it rose 1.35%, but nationally, it grew a third faster at 1.8%. So, and you compare, and that's the national number. If you look at the high performing states, Texas grew at 3.2%. Florida grew at 2.2%. North Carolina at 2.1%. So, again, even though things in Pennsylvania, in this example, in the greater Pittsburgh region, are getting better, it's still an underperformance. And if we did more things right in Harrisburg for a pro-growth agenda, investment, jobs, and growth, all of those things would be coming. They would be advancing more quickly, and that's what we should want.
And I don't know if you've noticed this, when you go to the grocery store, or you go take your family out to the movies, or you go to the restaurant and you're buying dinner. But you know, one of the things that I've noticed is that our workforce, you know, people doing those jobs are getting older, right? They tend to be a little bit grayer. And you know, the concern that I have is that the reason for that is all of the people, all those working families, all those young families, they're leaving, you know, because they're going to these places where you're seeing the growth levels at a much higher, faster trajectory than they are here in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So that's a real problem. And, you know, we've talked about on this show in the past, when you take a look at our census data, the Independent Fiscal Office shows that, you know, over the next 10 years, we're going to see a net reduction of working age people 18 to 64. We're going to see that reduced by about 180,000 here in Pennsylvania. At the same time, we're going to see an increase in the population of elderly Pennsylvanians, retirees age 65 and older. So, you know, here you have a huge dilemma for job creators in our state because, you know, the workforce, it's getting older. You have these young working families are going elsewhere for the jobs. And so it's a real it's a pause point for policymakers in Harrisburg because, yeah, sure, things are good right now. But as we've always – you know, we always talk about in Pennsylvania, you know, the national economy catches a cold and Pennsylvania catches pneumonia. That, you know, we are only a few, you know, bad quarters out of a recession, that the economy is humming along. But we need to get the fundamentals in place. And, you know, that's the concern. That's something else that we've – you know, another bit of research that, you know, is out there is – provided by our friends at the American Legislative Exchange Council. And, you know, we've talked about their rich states, poor states report. And the numbers that we've been talking about thus far, you know, they bear out with those economic fundamentals. When you take a look at our wages, when you take a look at our the growth, you know, outlined in that Allegheny study, you know, all of it goes back to the fundamentals. And, you know, according to the rich states, poor states report, you know, we still Pennsylvania can't get out of the middling states in the lower quartile of their research. We're ranked 38th. We've climbed out of the, you know, compared to 2015, we've jumped two states. So, you know, we started at, well, I guess three states. We're at 41 in the economic outlook ranking, according to ALEC, and we're now at 38. So we've jumped a little bit. But when you take a look at those high performing states that you talked about earlier, they're doing things to get their economic house in order that we just can't.
State leaders should be especially interested in learning how, you know, your member companies can grow, what factors affect the health of those kinds of ventures. And that was why I wanted to have you elaborate on the NFIB, the tax fairness agenda that your organization has proposed for state government.
You look historically here in Pennsylvania at our level of business churn, right? The numbers of businesses that are starting and the number of businesses that are going out of business or failing. And, you know, some of those are failures, companies that just can't make it, but those also are business sales. Those are business transitions. And, you know, call that – the economists talk about that in terms of business churn.
Right.
And so,
right.
You know, if you have an economy where you have lots of business startup, but then you have lots of businesses that are going under or closing, that's actually a good thing because it shows that there's a dynamic economy, that people are taking risks.
How many times did Milton Hershey fail before he succeeded?
That's exactly right. And so, you know, we want to see higher numbers, and Pennsylvania's had historically low numbers. And for the last 30 years, our numbers of business churn have been at their lowest levels. And, you know, one of the reasons for that is our tax laws in Pennsylvania create a disincentive for investment. And, you know, while we're seeing a bump right now in the economic activity, in large part it's due to the Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that we've made some really significant headway to stimulate job creation, stimulate economic activity. But the rules here in Pennsylvania aren't allowing us to take full advantage of it. And I think, you know, when you take a look at, you know, the economic indicators in our state versus nationally, it plays out. The Allegheny Institute pointed that out. You take a look at the unemployment rates nationally and statewide, it plays out. But, you know, there are some things that we can do to take better advantage of that federal tax, and they all have to do with investments, that you have the ability to, you know, write off pizza equipment purchases in the year that they were made, as opposed to forcing a business owner to take 10 years to deduct those expenses. And so you think about a restaurant that buys an oven or buys a stove and forcing them to depreciate that over 10 years, as opposed to allowing them to just write that off in the year that they make that purchase. If you allow a business to do that, they're going to make that purchase right now. We're allowed to do that at the federal level, and many businesses are taking advantage of it. But here at the state level, we actually punish that type of activity, that transaction, because you don't get any tax benefit from it.
And so the tax fairness package, you've got three items here, and actually these items in some ways track the way Pennsylvania treats corporate taxpayers.
That's exactly right. So, and, you know, so almost every other state allows for expensing of these equipment purchases, Section 179. But in Pennsylvania, we don't allow the full deduction of those expenses. Another big key is like-kind exchanges. What does that mean? Well, you buy a business, you build the business, you sell the business, you take the profits and invest in another business. Every other state in the nation allows you to apply that loss in buying the new business against the profit that you made in selling the old one. Every state except Pennsylvania. So if you're looking for that type of business churn, to be able to take that one asset, grow it, sell it, then transfer that money into a new asset and to be able to generate that tax benefit from doing that, we don't allow it in Pennsylvania. So again, it's another thing that puts us behind the eight ball. And a third key bill allows for the treatment of, you know, net operating losses that, you know, big companies have the ability, corporations, to apply losses in the really lean years against the profits that they have in the good years. And the idea behind that is to flatten out the, you know, the spikes, the peaks and the valleys that occur in the business cycle. We don't have the ability to do that with small businesses. And yet, you know, during the economic recessions that we just went through, you have a number of business people who've had to break into their life savings in order to make payroll. But the state law doesn't allow them to apply those types of losses and making payroll to apply that to the actual having to sell a little bit of their life savings in order to make that transaction happen. And so, you know, while we're seeing incomes go up, we're seeing the economy start to grow, we have to bear in mind that it's those kinds of fundamental changes that we could make in the tax code that could truly make our economy more stimulative, make the tax code more stimulative here in Pennsylvania for the smallest job creators.
Yeah, absolutely. And it helps to think of these things as things that would make Pennsylvania consistent with the federal tax code and would also make tax treatment equal between smaller businesses and corporations. Well, Kevin, this is great stuff. As ever, thank you so much for being on the program, talking things through with me. For the folks who are listening, where can they go to learn more about you and your organization and the Small Business Tax Fairness Package?
Thanks. They could visit nfib.com/research to take advantage of all of the optimism data, the other economic data. If you want to learn about more what we're doing here in Pennsylvania, visit nfib.com/PA. And you can certainly join the conversation on Twitter at @NFIB_PA.
Well, thank you for that. We also want to thank our friends at the Allegheny Institute. You can follow them at AlleghenyInstitute.org and our friends at the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is ALEC.org. As ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. From Kevin and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Given its well-earned reputation as a haven for the tax and spend crowd, most would look at California as an unlikely place for a tax revolt. But recent increases in gas taxes and vehicle fees have finally pushed the overburdened citizens of the Golden State to the breaking point. Pennsylvanians, who in recent years have seen 30 cents per gallon added in taxes on gasoline, might scoff at the California gas tax increase of 12 cents per gallon. But coupled with other fees, the hikes are costing the average California family an additional $779 per year. That has stoked outrage, which has resulted in over 1 million voters signing a petition to place a question on the upcoming November ballot to rescind the hikes. It also cost one lawmaker his job. In addition to enjoying referendum rights, Californians also have the ability to recall legislators. That is exactly what happened in the recent primary election when Democrat Josh Newman, who cast one of the deciding votes in passing the gas tax hike, was recalled. It wasn't even close. He lost by 20%. Polling shows the proposition that would strike down the gas tax and fee hikes has a better than even chance of passing. At this early stage, that is a significant development in a state where tax hikes are viewed as a positive thing by a substantial portion of the electorate. California, though, is no stranger to tax revolts. Back in 1978, a group of voters upset with high property taxes secured enough signatures to get the People's Initiative to Limit Property Taxation, or Proposition 13, on the ballot. Led by Howard Jarvis, the movement succeeded in cutting and limiting property taxes and sparked a nationwide wave of anti-tax efforts. Proposition 13, and the anti-tax era it ushered in, is also widely credited with adding fuel to the long-shot presidential campaign of a former movie actor and California governor, Ronald Reagan. Reagan, of course, made tax cuts a centerpiece of his presidency. Those cuts, in turn, produced one of the longest periods of economic expansion in American history. Meanwhile, back here in Penns Woods, the massive increase in gasoline taxes put into effect under former Governor Tom Corbett continues to have political implications. Since those increases were phased in over 3 years, it took consumers a while to feel the total impact. Eventually, the tax hike on producers was passed along to consumers. Today, Pennsylvania motorists shoulder one of the highest gas tax burdens in the nation. Tom Corbett is long gone, having been the first incumbent governor in state history to lose a re-election bid. But legislators who voted for the hike on gasoline producers are still feeling the sting. In last month's primary election, the lone sitting state senator to lose re-election was Randy Volokovich. His opponent, Ross Township Commissioner Jeremy Schaefer, made Volokovich's gas tax vote a key issue in the campaign. Schaefer won in a landslide, despite the fact Senate Republican leaders poured a ton of money into Volokovich's campaign. The impact will be wide-ranging. No longer can leaders promise to insulate reluctant members from voter wrath when they make unpopular votes. The potency of the gas tax issue now proven will likely be used against other incumbents in future election cycles. Unfortunately, for those of us in Pennsylvania, we lack both the rights to initiative and recall enjoyed by the residents of California. Therefore, there is no way to roll back the Corbett-era gas tax and fee hikes except by act of the legislature. That, of course, will never happen. Already, officials at the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation are saying they need even more money than the hundreds of millions generated from those increases. What is also unlikely to happen, in either Pennsylvania or California, is for transportation agencies to reform themselves. In Pennsylvania, public transportation, notably the Southeastern Pennsylvania Transit Authority, or SEPTA, remains a haven for patronage, union excess, and inefficiency. Motorists who never set foot on a SEPTA bus or train subsidize the cost in the form of taxes and even Pennsylvania Turnpike toll revenue. SEPTA and the Port Authority Transit, or PAT, in Pittsburgh are always in Harrisburg with their hands out for more money, yet reforms never happen. Pennsylvania voters should keep a close eye on California and the November initiative to roll back that state's gas tax hike. Perhaps, once again, Californians will ignite a tax revolt that will sweep across the fruited plain to Penns Woods. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WHHS-FM in Havertown, along with WCCS-AM and WLCY-AM in Indiana, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.